beautiful people, and welcome to the About That podcast with me, your host, your favorite geek psychologist, your favorite pop culture enthusiast, your favorite queen of the nerds, Dr. Vanessa Hintz. And today, lovely humans, I am excited to share with you all loudly and proudly that I am in my romantasy era in life. I have been introduced to the genre of romantasy books, and today I am bringing to you the first of two conversations about the phenomenal, the fantabulous, the best-selling series by Rebecca Yarros, the Empyrean series, featuring two books, a third to be on its way, the first being Fourth Wing, the second being Iron Flame. And we are going to lovingly and alliterationally, if that's a word, call these conversations the Bezgaith Breakdown. So, without further ado, let us get into the Bezgaith Breakdown Part 1, focused solely and exclusively on Fourth Wing. And so, as I do so often, because I believe context is important, we're going to contextualize this a little bit. So, for those of you who don't know, who is Rebecca Yarros? Rebecca Yarros is an author. She done wrote 511 books. If you go to her website, much to, I think, many people, I don't know if people know this, but Fourth Wing is not the first book that she wrote. Like, she wrote a whole bunch of books. So she is an author. She is a self-proclaimed, quote, military wife. So she is married to someone who has had a military career. And if you read Fourth Wing and Iron Flame, you absolutely see those things. Bezgaith is a war college. I mean, hello. And she is also a mother of six. And so she is a wife, she's a mom, she is an author, and she is so many things. And you will hear me gush, absolutely gush about her. If you listen to the episode I did where I talked about my experience of meeting her, that's a little flex. My experience of meeting her for 32 seconds at Emerald City Comic Con, she's just an amazing individual. And so what is Fourth Wing? As I mentioned, Fourth Wing is the first in the Empyrean series. It was released on May 2nd, 2023. And so I thought I was behind, you know, like I was not ahead of the game when I read Fourth Wing because it had already sort of like become so popular. But I was like 6 months after the release date. So you know what? It's fine. But I'm going to talk about that in a moment, how I got into sort of this space. I'm going to go ahead and read the description. And this is actually taken from the website, Rebecca Yarros, her website. And this is the description of Fourth Wing. So if you are thinking to yourself right now, my good friend, what is Fourth Wing? What is that about? Allow me to read you this description. Quote, enter the brutal and elite world of a war college for dragon riders from USA Today, bestselling author Rebecca Yarros. 20-year-old Violet Soaringale was supposed to enter the Scribe Quadrant, living a quiet life among books and history. Now, the commanding general, also known as her toughest talon's mother, has ordered Violet to join the hundreds of candidates striving to become the elite of Navarre, dragon riders. But when you're smaller than everyone else and your body is brittle, death is only a heartbeat away. Because dragons don't bond to, quote, fragile humans. They incinerate them. With fewer dragons willing to bond than cadets, most would kill Violet to better their own chances of success. The rest would kill her just for being her mother's daughter, like Zayden Ryerson, the most powerful and ruthless wing leader in the Riders Quadrant. She'll need every edge her wits can give her just to see the next sunrise. Yet, with every day that passes, the war outside grows more deadly, the kingdom's protective wards are falling, and the death toll continues to rise. Even worse, Violet begins to suspect leadership is hiding a terrible secret. Friends, enemies, lovers, everyone at Bezgaith War College has an agenda, because once you enter, there are only two ways out, graduate or die, end quote. Okay, first of all, y'all, just reading all of that, I felt like I was transported into The Young and the Restless or something. That was just a whole lot. I also started to get super hyped because I remember what it was like for me to read this book the first time. And just reading all of that is like transporting me back to where I was sort of in that space when I was really immersed in this world. And I'm so excited. I'm so excited, if you can't tell, to talk about it because it is absolutely amazing. So apart from all of the many different layers, daytime drama style, aside from that, there's just so much, there's so much beauty in this story. Like, I can't even. And so how did I come into this space? I think I mentioned this before on one, maybe two other episodes, but my younger sister, actually, shout out to my younger sister, Via, she recommended Fourth Wing to me. It was actually at the beginning of 2024. I had just spent 2 years, and I'm going to reiterate, 2 years reading the entirety of the Wheel of Time series. So if you all are familiar with the Wheel of Time, it's 15 books long. And typically when I read with my ears. So I listen to audiobooks because I have 50-11 jobs and I just, it's hard for me to, it used to be, let me reiterate. It used to be very difficult for me to find time to read with my eyes, like to sit down and read with my eyes. So I listen to audiobooks because I can listen to it while I'm getting dressed, while I'm cooking, while I'm walking, like whatever, while I'm working out. And so my sister recommended this to me because after I got 2 years, y'all, it took me 2 years to listen to The Wheel of Time, which was actually super dope. This is a random tangent side story because the events throughout The Wheel of Time story actually took 2 years. Like, they unfolded in 2 years of story time, and the fact that it took me 2 years, I just think that's super dope. Anywho, when I was done with that, I was like, what am I going to do next? I literally spent 2 years of my life with these same characters, and I was like at a loss. I'll also say that at the beginning of 2024, I was going through it, like emotionally. I think, you know, the new year is genuine or typically a time of reflection for a lot of folks because everything is new and it's like new year, new me, like everybody making resolutions, what have you. And I was just in a place because my life was so different at the beginning of 2024 than it was at the beginning of 2023, and not necessarily in a good or bad way, but in a way I didn't expect. And so at the beginning of the year, not only was I like going through my own sort of like, what is life right now? I was also trying to figure out how to balance and navigate all the many responsibilities that I had. So child, I was going through it, okay? I was going through it. If you all listen to the episode about Fan Expo New Orleans, you will hear that I went there with my younger sister, Via, and my mom. And it was actually at that, when we were like just vibing at that convention, that my sister was like, you should read Fourth Wing. And I was like, what's a Fourth Wing? Like, is there also Second Wing, Third Wing? What are we talking about? What is a Fourth Wing? And she was like, it has dragons. And I was like Game of Thrones? Like Daenerys Targaryen pre-season 8? Like, what are we talking about? Dragons? And so I was like, all right then. And I literally knew nothing about, Fourth Wing. Like, absolutely nothing. And my sister was like, you should read this. Like, I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. And I was like, all right then. So I was at a time in my life where not only was I like feeling some kind of way, my sister, like she was so adamant about this recommendation. So I was like, all right then, cool. And so in typical fashion, I listened to the book for the first time. And can we just, I just need to pause and say this with my whole chest. Shout out to Rebecca Solaire, who is the narrator who read Fourth Wing. I listened to it on Audible, and let me, just shout out to all the audiobook narrators. Like, I don't know if y'all know how much joy you bring into people's lives, mine included. My way has become that I listen to books first before I read them with my eyes, and it started with Fourth Wing. Let me just tell you that. Like, I listened to this book, and the when I say, some people will understand what I mean, when I say Rebecca Solaire, she put her whole foot into that narration. Like, she did that. Like, I was crying listening to this book just because of the way that she was reading. And, like, it was just so amazing. And so, shout out to Rebecca Solaire. And shout out to all audiobook narrators. Like, y'all the real MVPs, for real. Like, yes, I'm here for it. So, anywho, at the time of this recording, I have read Fourth Wing twice. So, the first time I listened to it, and the second time I read it with my eyes. And I will say, too, that, you know, this story, like I said, came to me at a time in my life where I Like, I needed that. Like, I have talked on other episodes about, you know, escapism and how one of the reasons that I love pop culture is that it allows me to disassociate, not in a pathological way, but in a voluntary, I think very healthy way, disassociate from some of the heaviness in life, right? Like, the work that I do is heavy, and the reason I engage with pop culture in the way that I do is because it speaks to me in some way, and sometimes that speaking is allowing me to focus my attention elsewhere, to get so, I had forgotten even after listening to 15 books, right? Like, I had forgotten what it feels like to be immersed in like another world. And that is what Fourth Wing and Navarre and Bezgaev, it is a whole situation. And that's why I still watch Young and the Restless, y'all. Like, Genoa City, Wisconsin, it is a real place, but like the Young and the Restless Genoa City, Wisconsin is not a real place. And I still very much am invested in The Young and the Restless, one, because it gives me background noise when I'm working, and two, because I have literally been watching it for over 20 years, and I'm just invested in that world and all of the shenanigans afoot with all those rich people. But anywho, this story came to me at a time in my life where I needed it, and it has changed so much about the way that I care for myself. And I think it was, again, getting back into this space and refamiliarizing myself with how valuable reading for leisure can be, right? Like, as a scholar, as an academic, you always reading something because you have to. And Fourth Wing really started this cascade in my life of making time to read, both with my ears and with my eyes. So now I am in this sort of mode where I read before bed every night. Like, and that was not something that I was making space for prior to Fourth Wing. And again, part of that is because the story was so dope, and then my sister just kept giving me recommendations of other things to read. And also because I like the way that it made me feel, right? I like the way that it makes me feel when I am immersing myself in this, whether, again, it's listening or reading with my eyes. And so I have a special connection and kinship with this story, not only because of sort of the context with which it came into my life, but also because it's a dope story. And so without further ado, I'm going to tell you why, right? I'm going to tell you why I think that this story is super dope. I'm going to tell you how it spoke to me and what I feel like are things that of value, for lack of a better word, that this story provides, not only to me as an individual, but to us, I think, societally. And the first thing I really want to talk about is sort of this existential flavor of the story. And when I say existential, I don't necessarily mean that in like the philosophical sense. I'm an existential therapist. That's just the way I think about the world, you know, from that lens, from that perspective. And so no matter what I'm reading, no matter what I'm watching, no matter what I'm consuming, I feel like I'm always and often engaging with it in that way. In this sense, when I talk about existentialism as it relates to Fourth Wing, what I'm really talking about is, or what I'm specifically talking about is how we confront mortality. And I should have said this at the beginning, but I'm gonna go ahead and say it now. This entire episode, hashtag spoiler alert. So if you haven't read Fourth Wing, like, just don't listen to this. Like, don't listen to this at all, because it's about to be a whole bunch of spoilers up in here. And I'm sorry, I'm not sorry. So anyways, back to this conversation about facing mortality. So Bezgaev is a war college. And within Bezgaev, there are four different quadrants that cadets can go into. The healer's quadrant, the scribe's quadrant, the infantry, or the writer's quadrant. And the writer's quadrant is by far the most deadly. And again, when I say it's the most deadly, in this quadrant, they literally read a death roll every morning. So every morning when they get into their military formation, somebody read a list of names of all the people who died. Like, damn, every day. Like, every day. It's a lot, right? And so there's a quote in the book where, spoiler alert, the book is primarily written from Violet's point of view, almost exclusively. And there's a point in which she's talking about sort of the hedonism, for lack of a better word, that she experiences and sees in the writer's quadrant. Like, people just be up in there living their best life. And she says, quote, "There's not much reason to deny yourself when you might not live through tomorrow." And so from the perspective of people in the writer's quadrant, like, death is to be expected. Like, they are literally in probably the most dangerous place on earth, arguably, right? They also are like a nation at war, like, and so one would think perhaps the front lines of the war is the most dangerous. And I would say Bezgaeth, and particularly the writer's quadrant, and I think later on in this story, not necessarily in this book, but in this saga, someone refers to Bezgaeth as like a death factory, because essentially they are, it's to be expected, right? Like, they are at the tippy top of the military, like the most elite Navy SEAL level military folks, right? And so when your training is enough that within this training facility every day we have to talk about who died, why wouldn't we live today like it's our last? Because it very well might be, right? And speaking of the death roll, right? And so within the text and sort of within the metaphysical sort of spiritual beliefs that are conveyed throughout the text, it's clear that within Navarre, they have a multitude of gods that they recognize. And the god of death, referred to as Malik, they talk about how once someone's name is read on the death roll, like, we're done, we're moving on, right? Like, their items are either burned or sent home to their families, and then it's like, we don't talk about that ever again, right? There's a quote from the book that says, "I'll never get over how quickly people move on around here, how callously death is swept under a rug and trampled on minutes later." And so, again, there's this interesting sort of juxtaposition, this interesting dichotomy between we expect people to die, and then when that happens, we don't sit in it, we just move on. Like, people die and we move on. And I'm not here to say that's good, bad, or otherwise. I think people manage grief in the way that most aligns with them. And, again, I'm going to say this. If you have not read this book, stop listening right now. If you have, prepare your life. Even though, like, dragon riders and writers are sort of bred, trained to expect death, sometimes it hits differently. And I'm specifically talking about Liam's death. That one hit different. And I would say that within the context of the story, it's because it was not part of the plan. It was not expected. In the entirety of their training, right, we hear Violet at the very beginning of the story is talking about how low the likelihood is that she will survive to graduation, because the numbers just ain't numbering. Like, the math ain't mathing. Like, there's a specific percentage of people that not only survive just getting across the parapet and becoming cadets, but then surviving 3 years in the space to become writers. And so, again, there is an expectation that death will happen. It doesn't mean that it's not difficult, right? And when death happens outside of what one would expect, it's exceptionally hard, right? And that is what we saw with Liam and his death, which again occurred in the context of like war and battle and all of these things. And still, it was difficult. And you hear Violet at the time, and then subsequently later on in the saga, that how much that affected her, right? And how responsible she feels, even though Liam was conscripted into probably the most dangerous, most deadly place in the entirety of the world, even though he probably woke up every day knowing that death is inevitable for us all, but there was an increased likelihood of his death because of the nature of where he was, it still hit different, right? And so I can appreciate how Rebecca Yarros navigated conversations about death and grief, because even when you live somewhere where they read a death roll every morning, and I don't know if this was just me, but the death roll to me was very reminiscent of pandemic times when every day they did those White House briefings and they shared those death numbers, right? Like, they weren't names. They were names to people who knew that they lost someone, right? But every day we were confronted with how many people we lost to COVID. And after a while, there was almost like this desensitization, right? At the beginning of COVID, when we didn't know what was going on, like, we had no idea. So hearing the new information, seeing these numbers, it made us feel a way. And then after, you know, 6 weeks of that, did we feel the same way? Maybe yes, maybe no. And still, if those things happened again now, how would we feel? How would we react, right? And so, again, I think Rebecca Yarros did an amazing job of navigating mortality, how we sort of face that, how we manage grief. It just, and the scene with Liam, this is another, which again, shout out to Rebecca Solaire. The way that she read that, I was walking down the street listening to this book crying. People looking at me like, whoa, what's happening here? I'm fine. I'm just having a moment because this is too much. Like, it's absolutely too much. And so the other thing I want to talk about with regard to the story and what I value about it is this sort of, particularly with Violet as the main character and the point of view that we see most often, this story of overcoming adversity. And so Violet is a person with a disability, and it is sort of, from the very beginning, we learn that physically, Violet is different, right? And in August 2023, Rebecca Yarros actually did an interview with Health. I think it's health.com, but Health. This is what she said with regard to Violet's disability and the importance of having this represented. And so Violet having EDS is not explicitly named in the book because knowledge of it wouldn't have fit with the level of medical advancement of the society in the book. It was important to me to represent this chronic illness because my four sons and I all have the hypermobile type of Ehlers-Danlos. Growing up, I never saw that kind of representation in the fantasy genre or a character in the type of chronic pain I live with. End quote. And so, for those of us who may be unaware, EDS is the result of a gene mutation that causes issues with the production and processing of collagen, a type of protein that's found within our body's connective tissue. Most people with EDS experience symptoms that affect their skin, their muscles, their joints, and their blood vessels. And these symptoms can include hypermobility or a larger range of joint movement than average, unstable joints and joint dislocation, weak muscles, chronic pain, fragile skin, loose skin, as well as abnormal bruising and scarring. And so with Violet, what we see most often, again, is her navigating this treacherous Navy SEAL level physical training as someone who has a physical disability, as someone who has weaker muscles or unstable joints. And so from the very beginning, the first scene when she's crossing the parapet to get to Bezgaith and how she sort of has to navigate that. And then when she's done, how she has to take care of herself, right? And the way Dane Atos, whom we will talk about ad nauseum, the way her best friend, her BFF Dane Atos, responds to her disability and sort of her needing to accommodate herself in a way that allows her to be successful. And so I think that, again, first of all, shout out to Rebecca Yarros for saying, like, this is something I want to say and I'm going to say it. Like, I want to write something that I wish I had seen, right? And her, I don't even want to say courage, because what I think often happens is that we identify people with disabilities as doing something courageous when they are just living their life, right? And I don't say just as in that is somehow negative. What I mean is, why would we expect someone with a disability not to do that thing? You know what I'm saying? Like, why would we, if this was a Black person writing a Black character, would we call it courageous? This is, Rebecca Yarros is a person with a disability who is writing a character with a disability. Is it courageous? Or is it representation, right? Like, so that, I think, first and foremost, and that is something that I actually learned from some students of mine who did a presentation about disability, and this was something that they shared, like, why is it courageous for people with disabilities to just live their lives? And again, I don't want just to sound like it is dismissive, because we absolutely live in an ableist society. So for people with disabilities to navigate the world, it is difficult. Is it courageous? Or does us identifying it as courageous mean that we are somehow infantilizing people with disabilities? This is something to consider, right? And so what I appreciate, again, about Violet and everything about her is the way that she comes to relate to and value what makes her different and what makes her unique. And there's a point in the story after her and Dane have, like, their 17th falling out, because Dane is acting like a little wench. But she actually relays words to him that he said to her at the very beginning, when she is really acknowledging, yes, I'm different. And yes, I'm going to navigate this in a way that feels best for me. And what she says is, quote, this place, Miss Gaith, cuts away the bullshit and the niceties, revealing whoever you are at your core. And Dane had constantly treated Violet as someone who is fragile, as someone who needs help, right? Like, you are a, I don't want to use the word victim, because I feel like that word has been weaponized in many ways. I think Dane had, and which is why they have a falling out, right? Like, Dane is treating Violet as someone who needs help, as someone who can't do it without help. And she, time and time and time again, is like, no. I am, this place is revealing who I am at my core. And let me just say, who Violet is at her core is a bad bitch. She is a boss bitch. And in this interview, further on in this interview with Health, Rebecca Yarrow says, quote, Zayden believes it's Violet's intelligence and tenacity that are her greatest assets, both of which are developed because Violet can't depend on her physical body. In their brutal environment, it was exceptionally important that Violet's love interest treat her as capable and encourages her to become her best self instead of infantilizing or holding her back, end quote. So Dane Atos, take notes. See, this is why you got put in the friend zone, sir, for a number of reasons. First of all, Zayden and Violet are just faded lovers, and that's fine, and fight me if you want to. And Dane, you got put in the friend zone because don't nobody want to be babied like that, bro. Like, I think from the very beginning, that was a juxtaposition that we saw between Dane and Zayden. Zayden very much, like, reminded me of my parents. Like, I'm not about to baby you. You better do what you gotta do and let's keep it moving. Which, again, there's problematic natures to that as well. And so I don't want to say that we should not accommodate people, because we absolutely should. And that is what I think we see throughout Violet's journey. She initially does not want to accommodate. She wants to do everything just like everybody else. And if you all have heard me talk about equity, that is not operating from the lens of equity. Equity is understanding that we all have different needs, and we are going to give people the resources they need to succeed based on their unique needs, right? So accommodation is not less than. Different is not deficient. Needing an accommodation does not devalue you. It is uniquely who you are, and you are doing uniquely what you need for yourself. And we see this particularly after Violet bonds Tarn, her dragon, and she bonds like the biggest, most baddest dragon of ever. There's only one dragon that, like, outranks him, and we'll talk about that later. But Violet, this person who has often considered herself as weak, as less than, no dragon would ever want her, right? She gets not one, but two dragons. And one of the dragons is ginormous, right? One of the dragons did not come to play. He came to slay, okay? And there is an instance where Violet is learning how to, what she terms in the story, keep her seat. So how can she remain on Tarn's back while he's flying around and doing flips and dips and sachets and all of this, right? And so there's a point in the story, which is absolutely adorable. Like, I can't even. Like, my heart is, like, clenching right now. Where Zayden, develops a saddle to put on the dragon for her so that she can stay in the seat. And in her conversation with Taryn, Violet is like, I'm not about to wear that. Like, okay, that's cute that y'all did this, and that's not fair. Like, I have to be able to hold my seat like everybody else. And this is what her dragon says to her. Quote, "There is no rule that says a dragon cannot modify their seat to serve their rider. You have worked just as hard, if not harder, than every rider in this quadrant. Just because your body is built differently than the others doesn't mean you don't deserve to keep your seat. It takes more than a few strips of leather and a pommel to define a rider." End quote. Y'all, and although Taryn was like a crotchety old guy, and the dynamic he has with Violet is just absolutely, ooh, I just love everything about it. He just says some real shit. Like, he just says some really real shit in terms of what I just referenced with regard to accommodation, right? Because you need something different doesn't mean that you're less than. Who made that rule up? People who can do all the things? People who are in positions of power, right? Just because you need to do something so that whatever goal that you're trying to achieve is most aligned with you, who says that you can't, bro? And I feel like what Taryn was describing to Violet here is that you decide what makes you a rider. You decide what gives you value, and it's not this saddle. It's not this seat. Further on in this conversation, Violet responds to Taryn, and she says, quote, "I might not want to appear different than every other rider on this field, but I already am." End quote. Point blank, period. I say this all the time in my DEI trainings. You are uniquely you. You are who you are. There is nothing wrong with that. Whether you are the same as everybody else around you or different, who you are is who you are. And I don't think that you meeting yourself where you are, giving yourself what you need to succeed, makes you less than. I would argue that is actually very empowering. And that is what we see in the growth and development of Violet throughout the course of Fourth Wing in her first year at Bezgaev. She is coming into her own. She is becoming empowered in more ways than one. Not because she changes her physical body, which she absolutely does. Like, she up here getting swole. Not because of that. Because she modifies and changes the way she values herself. And so, like, I could lose 100 pounds tomorrow. Would that be the reason that I feel better, worse, or the same about myself? No. It's the way that I value aspects of myself, aspects of others, all of these different things, right? So, again, shout out to Violet's story of perseverance and of overcoming adversity. And again, not just in the physical sense, not just in the way that she continues to achieve all of these physical feats, crossing the parapet, scaling the gauntlet, riding a dragon, right? Like, yes, those are physical things that she does, and she does those in a way that is accommodating to her, which in turn, I think, leads her into a space where she acknowledges that there's nothing wrong with her. There's nothing wrong with having to wrap your knees. There's nothing wrong with you. It's about the way that she values herself. And I would argue that the people that she surrounds herself with, the people that she's in relationship with, not just Zayden, which we're going to talk about next, but also her friends like Ree, her BFF Ree, not Dane, he acting like a little, you know, he acting like a wench. You know what I'm saying? He on his redemption arc. We'll talk about that during the next part two of this. So put a pin in that. And the people that Violet surrounds herself with, her squad, Zayden, everybody just out here like uplifting her. And I'm here for this. I'm absolutely here for this 100%. Whoo. Violet got me up in here trying to go to church. You know what I'm saying? If she is not one of your sheroes at this point, you better check yourself, because she is dope. And that, unfortunately, is all that we have time for today. And so I invite you, I implore you, I beseech you to come back to hear part two of the Bisguided breakdown about Fourth Wing. Because we're going to talk all about that Shadow Zaddy, Zayden Ryerson, as well as why the love story between Zayden and Violet is one that is beautiful and unique and something we cannot get enough of. And so until then, beautiful people, I wish you and your families safety, health, and joy. Come back soon.